everyone. You've tuned into Paradigm Shifters. And paradigm shifting is a big business these days for all of us. We're working so hard on growing and shifting our belief structures and becoming, the way I understand it, is becoming that very empowering being instead of the kind of enslaved small thinking being that sometimes we've been. So my paradigm shifter today is a really wonderful helper on that level. She's written a great book called The Emerald Tablets for 2012 and beyond. And for many of you who've studied, the Emerald Tablets are really kind of a fount of wisdom that are thousands of years old. And my wonderful interviewee, who's Ashlyn of Shasta Vortex Adventures, there in Mount Shasta. It's her own, it's her own business. She takes people out on tours, but also as a super duper hypnotherapist and channel and amazing energy person. And I know because I got that experience with her when I came through Mount Shasta on my wonderful adventure. There's a different kind of Shasta Vortex adventure, wasn't it, Ashlyn?
Yes, we have both inner and outer adventures here at Shasta Vortex.
Yes, and you literally have the capacity with all your talents and your channeling to ride the many, many levels of resonance that we can experience consciously if we learn how. And I think there's a lot in this book that teaches us how. So welcome to the show, Ashlyn.
Well, thank you, and thanks for that wonderful introduction. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm just delighted, actually. And Thoth, and that's how it's said, is it not, Thoth?
Well, I call him Thoth, and he, you know, in all the years I've been working with him, he's never corrected me once.
Well, then let's just assume he knows.
People call him various names, you know, Tot, whatever.
Yeah. I've heard many, and probably he doesn't quite care because that name has been used through many, many parts of history, many levels of consciousness, probably different focus from different languages. Who knows, right?
Yes, that's right.
So you've channeled him, and I'd like you to explain to people. I mean, this book is really wonderful, and I'll tell you things that I love about it after you get going here, but he is a very famous kind of a stalwart pin for so much of our consciousness, is he not? Would you like to explain to people who he is?
Well, he is was a king priest of Atlantis for many thousands of years. He was an immortal in human form. And then when Atlantis was being destroyed in that one day period, he was instructed to go up to the tallest hill in Atlantis, hop in his spaceship, take all of his spiritual tools and those people he could trust with him. And he did just that, and he headed toward Egypt. When he got to Egypt, he found the people living in caves, and they were very angry to see the spaceship up above their heads, so they came out yelling at him, waving their tools at him, And as it says in the book, he froze them with his magic science.
Woo!
And told them that he was there to be their friend. So eventually they believed him, he unfroze them, and he started the Egyptian civilization also, and was actually the one who built the Great Pyramid.
Was he a man or is he a consciousness being? You know what I mean?
He was in physical form.
Okay. But he is very strong in the world of spirit now, is he not?
He's one of these more powerful masters that are floating around our galaxy, assisting us in many different ways.
And there are those who say he came in and he was Hermes, he's been all these different beings. I think someone said he's even Jesus. Do you believe that? Is that?
No, Jesus. And Thoth is Thoth. And one of the things that Thoth did during our channel sessions was he put certain things in better perspective. So many people have assumed things about him. He wanted to set the record straight. Like, he is not an ibis-headed being.
Okay.
Nor is he a baboon. And, you know, the reason you see him portrayed like that in so many publications is that those were sacred animals for the Egyptians, and so that's how they prayed him, but he literally had a physical human head, you know, when he was doing his king priest stuff. And also you mentioned the Hermes thing. He told me that he was not Hermes, that he was Hermes' teacher in spirit while Hermes was in the physical. So that's why a lot of their information is similar.
So if the Emerald Tablets are really an amazing kind of poetic epic, not fable, but story, if you will, that tells us a great deal about our the history of human consciousness, or would you say it that way? Why would he want to redo it now?
He came to me when I was in meditation on Mount Shasta, one of the many sacred sites I take people to, and he asked me to rewrite the Emerald Tablets for the 21st century reader, because the book that was written by Marcel Doreal in 1925-1930 was difficult to read, and not many people were reading it. It was hard to understand. He wanted me to bring it into the 21st century language. So that's the first thing we did, was edit that old book, take it out of, you know, take out words like thee, thy, thine, thou, and there were certain areas in the book that I didn't understand, and so Stoth clarified those for me. We also wrote a 10-page glossary that's in the back of the book that
yeah,
helps
I like
you
that.
To understand those unusual terms that are in the book.
I really like that, because it gives us the ability. Some of this stuff needs to be read a lot. Do you know what
yeah.
I mean?
It's too many. In a way, it's sort of like a holy book, but where you can just open it up and to any old page and you get some inspiration for the day. Or, you know, it's something that you want to keep in your presence and read over and over again. Those requested that I did not do an e-book out of it for that particular reason, because people actually need to hold that book in their hands, feel mm-hmm. the energy of it. And sometimes Thoth will even read the book over your shoulder, you know, if you're at the right vibrational frequency to notice that.
And I also enjoy, it kind of buzzes in my hand. I like that a lot.
Yeah. A lot of
because let's talk about, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I'm excited. So what can I do, you know?
Hey, let's just talk, okay? No rules.
Well, one of the things that, you know, I'm also an intuitive, so one of the things I'm fascinated by are the flows of frequency or consciousness through the universes. And there's a lot about this book, even Thoth himself, that gives me an expanded sense of what does that all mean. For example, when you wrote about, or you channeled about him not dying, but changing out of his body and moving through the universes in different ways than using death as a portal, right? Can you say more about that?
No, because I don't exactly understand what you're asking me.
Okay, he basically said, and I should get the right page here, that basically he didn't die when he left. He just moves out of this particular incarnation or this particular body, and his soul carries on all over, and he makes choices, but he's learned how to do it without dying.
Well, he is immortal.
I like that.
He is immortal.
Yeah.
And he goes to the halls of Amenti a lot to rejuvenate himself. That's one of the many places he goes. But, you know, as far as me saying how he does it, that part I don't know. I just know that he does, and that we can too. Once
yeah,
we
I want to do
more
that.
That. Yeah, right. I'm working toward that too.
I want him to come in here right now and teach us. Let's talk about the halls of Amenti. I like that a lot.
Well, they were originally, or at least talked about in this book. There were actually 10 islands of Atlantis. It's not just one continent. They were on one of the islands, the one that was the, I don't know exactly if he told me which one they were on. Anyway, he would go underneath the ground in the earth, deep inside the earth, to the halls of Amenti, which is where the flower of life exists, and there's lots of different beings that go down there for rejuvenation and the lords of the cycles hang out there.
That's not where the presidents keep their bunkers, is it?
No.
I'm just being funny. But you know what's interesting? You wrote about how the Atlantean, all the islands and so on are out in the middle of the ocean, right?
In the Atlantean Ocean.
In the Atlantean Ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that they went down. Well, anyway, keep talking about the Halls of Amenti. I'll finish with my thoughts.
Well, I don't have anything else to say, really.
Well, I think that they're a source of, they're like the huge library, are they not? I got the sense that they were a source of wisdom.
I don't know. I don't remember writing that in the book, but it's been a while since I've read it. Mm-hmm. I finished writing it in 2011, so I don't remember that specifically, but I wouldn't be that surprised if there was a lot of wisdom there. I mostly look at it as rejuvenation and recharging and connecting with those important beings that you need to have meetings with.
Yeah, can you talk more about the beings? And then I want to get into all these like little orientations to give us a sense of spiritual evolution in our own personal lives. But can you talk a little bit about some of the beings? Like he's one of them, but there are great, great masters that he also is in cahoots with at times, is he not?
Interesting question, and the way I would answer that is not specifically. I can't give you any types of beings. I know I deal a lot with the ascended masters, and there's angels and archangels and creator gods and all kinds of beings who have been involved in creating the earth, bringing people to the earth, monitoring the earth. There's extraterrestrial beings. There's from all kinds of galaxies. There's no way I can put names to these things.
But you've just helped a lot. You've just put more of a map. I'm not expecting a map, but it's nice to hear more of a composite picture. Like, who are all these beings? And who are the ones that we channel and who want to come through? And why are they around us? You know, you've kind of talked about
how
that.
How do they care? Well, my definition for ascended masters, I'll start with that, is they are beings who have had many, many lifetimes on this planet, and they've learned how to master the physical realm, so they no longer need to come back into that birth-death cycle that we are still in as humans. But they're still concerned with what happens on the earth, so they hang out around the earth in spirit and can sometimes reappear in their physical form. And we call them ascended masters, and the masters have different retreats all around the world in near sacred sites that they meet for conferences, initiations, ceremonies, birthday parties, you know, whatever. and we go to those ascended master retreats in our dream time for healing and learning, and some of us actually even teach there. So that's one level of expanded spirit that we deal with. And I like to call us humans ascending masters. We too are learning how to master the physical realm, and eventually we'll be able to do things like create our own planets and hang out with Thoth and his buddies, whatever we feel inclined to do.
Well, then let's talk about... I have a split thinking, but then I'm a Gemini, so maybe it's always that way. But I wanted to speak of having all these beautiful, beautiful, the way I perceive them, as waves of consciousness that come sometimes embodied or sounding like they're embodied through Thoth or ascended beings or whomever, angels and so on. Can they help us, even ETs, right? Can they help the planet now collectively? Can they pull together to help shift our frequency to give us an ascension on the planet? collective ascension?
Well, my dear, all that is, creator, whatever you would like to call that, that all-expansive source of light and energy and love, was wise enough to give us free will when we were first placed on this planet. So we live in a free world, free will zone, which means that spirit cannot intervene in our lives unless we ask them to. They just have to observe and sit back and twiddle their thumbs and say, one of these days these humans will wake up and ask for our assistance.
Mm-hmm.
But until we do, you got to just hold back in the background. Of course, you know, when you're in a big accident, there's angels that'll come in and, you know, prevent you from being totally destroyed. That kind of thing can happen. But as far as them coming in and helping us to ascend, no, that's up to us. We got to do our own part.
Well, because I was thinking about the Atlantis. You wrote about Atlantis and Lemuria, and how about the Atlanteans took over Lemuria, and that didn't work for the Lemurians.
Not all the Atlanteans, just the negatively oriented ones. They weren't all bad.
Well, it's just so interesting, because I'm reading this going, well, I guess, and near the end of the book, you're saying, or Thoth is saying, how we could make our connections greater and more conscious with the beings that really want to help, and that would help us become, what, healed or ascended or whatever it is we're working toward, right? So I imagine that collectively it would work better if we all aimed in that direction.
I think what you're saying is that we need to spend more time talking with the spirits that are around us everywhere.
Anyway. And make the assumption, right?
The more adept you get at meditation and listening to spirit and learning how to use your intuitive skills of clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience, claircognizance, the easier it is for you to receive the messages from spirit. And that's what I tell people when I take them on my sacred site tours, too. People mm-hmm. say, I want to see all the sacred sites. Well, the sacred sites I take you to are just like the bunch of rocks and trees and ground. You know, you don't see them. They're nothing special. There's no statues or anything there. You got to feel them. You've got to use your intuitive abilities to experience the energy of the portals and the vortexes.
Do you find more and more people are doing that or wanting to do that?
Oh, I teach everybody that comes out with me how to do that.
Great. That's wonderful.
And I'm busy a lot.
we love that for you.
Going here. Yeah.
So you have
so I
a
got
whole...
people from all over the world who come to see me, and I'm starting to get recommendations from people all over the world. So
I love that.
Yes.
You love your work, don't you?
I love my work.
That's the best. That's part of, I think, what raises the consciousness on the planet when we're doing what we love.
Yeah, and I do my shamanic hypnotherapy work in the power spots. So, I'm doing two of the things I absolutely love, walking in the woods and changing people's lives.
Isn't that great? And so... How did you get into doing this? And then I want to get into some of the steps he gives us through this book that people can use to create their own ascension. Eh? But how did you get into all this, Ashlyn?
Guiding or spiritual work?
Evolutionary spiritual work, guiding and inner and outer. How's that?
Well, I was born and raised a Mormon, and Mormonism was perfectly okay for me for the first 19 years of my life until I met some new friends who told me about astrology and reincarnation. And I went, wow, that really feels like the truth. How come the Mormons never told me about that? And duh. And then I just started reading all the books I could get my hands on, metaphysical and occult books. And those books were telling me I could do the same things that I was reading in the books, but they were telling me how to do them. So I ended up getting a reading at the Berkeley Psychic Institute and immediately signed up for their one-year clairvoyant training class, took all the classes they had to offer, taught there for a little while, and that was in the mid-70s.
Hmm.
And then I've been taking various classes and just basically learning how to listen and feel the energy of spirit ever since then. And as far as guiding, in 1995 or 96, I was working for the Visitors Bureau here in town in Mount Shasta, and I all of a sudden I get this aha moment. It's like I'm telling people where to go, and I'm making $7 an hour. I thought, you know, I could make more money if I actually took those people to these places I know about. So that's how I started guiding.
So you'd be a practical girl, right?
I'm a Taurus, yes. We are.
Well, I love that you're doing the stuff that keeps furthering your own growth. I mean, isn't that the
Absolutely.
Best in the world?
Yeah. I go to work and I hang out in sacred sites. Wow.
Oh, what a shame. Oh, what a shame. Yeah. All right. So, you know, when I spoke to someone who had written the Bhagavad Gita for our more modern understanding, you know, and this reminds me of that in the sense that there's a lot written here on what steps people could take, like what's really important in life? What are our values? Do you want to talk a bit about that? Because you have understanding and you have unconditional love, you know, magic and integrity. Do you want to talk about some of these? People need to hear what they themselves can do.
Well,
like we have a society that's fraught with, I mean, everything here has to do with money, right?
Yeah, and a lot of our decisions are made from fear-based consciousness. And
even if people have a lot of money, they have a fear, a lot of them apparently have a fear of either keeping it or maintaining their position, blah, blah, blah. And the people who are struggling in the diminishing middle class never stop being afraid of what to do. It's really interesting, isn't it?
Well, when I talk about fear with my clients, I say in English, fear is spelled F-E-A-R. That could be seen as false energy appearing real. If you'll take a look at it, what you're afraid of is usually not happening in this moment. If you're in fear, you're afraid of something that has happened in the past or anxious about something that might happen in the future. You're not fully present in this moment, and that is where you have to be at all times. Not only that, but it also helps to find that place of peace and love, the light of God that lives within your own heart. Feel that, become that, enjoy that, resonate it, share it, and respond to all of life from that place of love and peacefulness inside yourself.
So that's just a stillness into the resonance of your divinity, is it?
Exactly. That's another way of putting it.
And that's a radiance. I love that. Let me see. So as far as meditation goes, for example, what do you recommend that people do? Do you think they just could meditate by sitting in land that is powerful, or sitting in land and feeling the resonance?
Going to power spots is always wonderful. It changes the energy, accelerates the vibrational frequency of the place and of you, but you can also meditate sitting in your own home and attain really high levels of understanding and resonance if you have a peaceful, quiet place to sit. It all depends on your intention. And when I meditate, I like to start by raising my vibrational frequency by surrounding myself in a sacred sphere of golden white light that's about 15 feet in diameter. And I remind people that that light goes around and through the body, touching every individual cell, raising your vibrational frequency so that you can more easily connect in with those higher levels of light, truth, love, wisdom, the higher vibrational frequency of spirit. Because there's lots of spirits out there you don't want to connect with. Those are vibrating at the lower frequencies, or the tricksters that sometimes hang out in the astral plane. So.
And how can you be sure you don't get stuck there?
Well, you surround yourself in gold.
Hmm.
you raise your frequency so high, those ones that are vibrating at black, gray, and brown and, you know, whatever, can't attain that frequency.
Makes sense to me.
And a very important thing that many people forget about is to become one with your higher self or your intuitive self. Now, let me define higher self. I feel that it is the part of you that is spirit, that has been with you in all lifetimes. It knows everything about you. It's like your own personal library. It's your intuitive voice, and it needs to become your very best friend. Mm-hmm. And the higher self is attached to the physical body with a cord of light that connects just below your navel. So it's always somewhere near the body. But to me, the ideal place for your higher self to be is fully merged with your physical form so the two of you can work together as one. And so I'm always teaching people how to invite their higher self to come all the way into their physical body. And when I ask them to give me some descriptive words on how that feels, the words they give me are peaceful, strong, centered, grounded, much happier. You know, it's like, okay, so that took like 5 minutes. How come you can't do that several times a day?
Right. Whenever
you feel better.
And you feel more loved, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's what I call owning your own space. And when you're owning your own space, those other trickster spirits or negative human energy has a harder time getting into your space.
I love that.
Yeah.
So talk a bit about, you know, I know you're a hypnotherapist as well. Do you think it's really important in Thos's case or our own cases to learn about past lives? Do you think that's helpful for people or is it necessary?
Well, I do past life regressions and soul retrievals, mm-hmm. but I don't do them just to let you know who you were in a past life. That's not what I like to do. I mm-hmm. do them to help you work through traumas or to help you move through relationship issues that you feel really stuck on. Because if there was a huge trauma in a past life, we tend to repeat it over and over again until we get it right. So.
And what does getting it right mean? Do you mean neutralizing the attachment or what?
Well, my technique for past life regressions is to, you know, talk the person back into that past life and so they can identify with that past life self that was in trauma, find mm-hmm. out what its story is, you know, what do we need to know before we start the healing. And then once we get that story, we have the person I'm working with send a beam of love from their heart into the heart of the past life self, letting them know that they recognize them as a part of you, that you love them very much, and you've come to show them another way of being, take them out of this place of trauma or fear or anxiety, whatever it may be. And then I surround them with violet flame. Now, violet flame is a very powerful field of transmutational energy that transmutes emotional upset back into its original essence, which is love and light. And so you sit there and you watch the higher self character with your intuitive vision, your inner vision, change from being all traumatized and fearful until you keep violet flaming until they're standing in their power and they're back to understanding that they are an unlimited, multidimensional being of light who no longer needs to be stuck in that place of pain. And once they've totally violet flamed, transmuted all their pain, you ask them to become one with you so the two of you can work together as a united whole instead of pulling each other in opposite directions. And then, you know, the past life self merges with the physical body. It gives you more energy, more greater access to who you really are. And it has totally de-energized that trauma that was, you know, creating chaos in your life.
That's wonderful, isn't it? Have you had experiences where people get back to you later and say their lives changed or that was a pivotal event for them?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of times when I take people on tours, especially guided vision quests, which are intensive learning situations, I like to say, if you drive up that mountain with me and you know how to use your intuitive skills, you have the right intention, chances are you won't come down the mountain the same person.
Woohoo! We want that.
I see the change immediately. And so do they.
And they love it, don't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, this is really exciting stuff. I love that kind of thing. Also, so let's talk about a number of things like ETs, extraterrestrials, and time. So I sort of wonder sometimes what the... Well, anyway, I'll just let you talk about what you think. Have you had any extraterrestrial experiences? I noticed that Thoth had to do with extraterrestrials when he left Atlantis, right?
Oh, yeah, you hopped in a spaceship, you know.
Well, I think that would be really nice. I'd like to hop in a spaceship, my friend.
Well, I do from time to time, but it's all, you know, on the inner planes. It's like, okay. I don't really have a physical spaceship, but I have traveled in spaceships in my meditations, and I have many extraterrestrial friends. Some of them, I actually ask them to do things like, do you think you could stop those chemtrails that are being sprayed over us every day?
What do they say? Do they help you?
They said, yes, we've been waiting for you to ask us for that. We're going to start in Northern California first.
All right.
So they went right on the job.
You're just giving us some really helpful information as well,
yeah.
Is that when we want that, we should...
Ask.
But what I'm hearing you say is you get in and you resonate with the connection first. Is that right? Or do you think it matters?
Well, these were a group of beings that I had had previous interactions with, so there was a level of trust there.
Okay. And they're actually... what did I hear one time? That they're perched waiting for some sort of quarantine to be lifted. Do you know about that?
You got to be careful about what you hear these days.
I know, and that's why I'm sort of throwing things out.
A lot of people are channeling these days, and I think that's really good. That's part of our learning experience. However, some of them are not trained properly, mm-hmm. and some of them do not surround themselves with gold or raise their vibrational frequency or high enough to connect with only the high-level spirits. So they are channeling low-level beings who give you fear-based information like quarantines that need to be raised. That sounds like a bunch of hogwash to me.
Well, I think what's interesting, too, if the people who are bringing through the information have an acute desire in what the answer is that they would prefer, I think they can really direct so that the information isn't quite as pure, you know?
Right, because you need to be a neutral receiver.
Yeah.
You cannot be emotionally upset or wanting a specific answer to happen or,
Like it comes
through our
brain.
The more you can just become a hollow bone is what the Native Americans call it. You're just a hollow bone, so that information goes straight through you and it doesn't get filtered through your belief systems or your fears or your anxieties.
That's really important, isn't it?
So that's one of the biggest challenges that I had to deal with in writing this book.
Mm.
Okay, am I centered and grounded and clear enough to receive this? And I also use something that I call my finger wisdom. I guess it's officially called kinesiology, where you pull your fingers together to get
yes
questions. Yeah. Oh, man, I use that finger wisdom throughout the entire book.
Oh, good.
Is this page as close to 100% correct as we can get it? If I got to know, I'd say, okay, which paragraph? Paragraph, I'd go, okay, which sentence? And then I go, okay, so how do you want to shift that sentence? I was so careful. I did not want to put anything out there on the market that wasn't as close to 100% true as I could possibly get it. And the sad part is a lot of channels don't do that.
No, but you can tell, let me see. how can I put this? Very often you can tell in your own reading. Years and years ago when I was first, you know, waking up to my metaphysical stuff, I never bought a book that I without opening it, leaning it up against my neck. And if it didn't
interesting.
And if it didn't, people thought I was noodly, but I knew I was crazy. I knew that I couldn't live in the world the way it was and I had to make some changes. So I was crazy, I guess. Anyway, I would hold it up, and if it didn't resonate that way, I did not open it. I didn't read it. Mm-hmm. And I don't do that anymore because I'm talking to a lot of people about their books, and I want to support evolution. But your book does that. I open it, and I feel a wonderful resonance, and I go, okay, she's good, right?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, I've had several testimonials from my readers saying, there is not, I couldn't sense a bit of Ashlyn's energy in this book. It was all.
I haven't checked it that thoroughly, but I would say I would agree. But I have to check it before I'll say I agree. Do you understand that?
Good girl.
Well,
don't believe anything I say. Try it out for yourself.
Well, I read that again the other day. Don't believe anything. No, what is it? Check everything.
Check everything.
Because like this is the age of information, eh?
When you put that book on your neck to see if you should read it or not, I asked my finger wisdom, is this book at least 85% correct or more? And if it's not, it's not worth my time to read.
Exactly. It's too many books
for
that.
Too much time to sort through what's true and what's not.
Exactly. Well, I think this is a wonderful book. I want to talk about everything in here, but right now I'm focusing on we talked a bit about your group of alien beings or extraterrestrials. Can you tell us a little bit about their nature? Is the process of, for example, ascension a common process through these different beings, the beings who are in different kinds of, I don't think the angels go through it quite that way. They're already ascended, but they're not really on our track, are they? Are the ETs?
I have a problem with that word ascension because it's been defined incorrectly by so many different people.
Okay.
Some people think that there is an end point, you know, like, oh, gee, we got to ascend by December 21st, 2012, or we're lost, you know.
And there's only 144,000 of us that get to do that, right?
No.
I'm teasing because that.
Yeah, right. That's another one of those far-flung, who knows what, ideas. Yeah, to me, ascension is just raising your vibrational frequency and becoming more consciously aware. And we're going to be always doing that forever. Even after we die, we continue to learn and grow and expand. And you could call that ascension. Yeah. So the ascension process, to me, is just like learning.
And
learning
so these
things that are of a higher frequency.
Yeah, that makes a huge amount of sense. Now, these ETs that you know in your inner circle, they also, do they talk of that sort of thing, or is this a function of the Earth plane 3D?
Yeah. Jesus, I've never thought of how can I answer this question?
Well, you can say I don't want to answer it because you're alive.
No, I don't mind answering it. I'm just kind of struggling for words. Extraterrestrials are probably vibrating at a higher vibrational frequency than we are here in our human form.
Okay.
Some of them are wise. Some of them, you know, that are working with the secret government, et cetera, are not all that of the highest integrity. But I like to think that most of them have our best interest in mind.
Okay.
My mind is taking me to the city of Telos, which is where the ancient Lemurians ended up living after Lemuria was destroyed, the continent of Lemuria.
Okay.
And one of the things that the beings in Telos are, they're all about peace, love, joy, harmony, working together, brotherly love. And one of their goals is teaching us humans or helping to remind us humans how to live like that once again, because we've forgotten. And so one of the things that they tell me about Telos is there is no hierarchy here. You know, mm-hmm. some people in books have called Adama the high priest of Telos. Well, I'm now almost finished writing a channel book with Adama, and he doesn't want to be called the high priest of Telos. He says there is no hierarchy here. We all just do what we do, the best that we can possibly do, and we love our jobs, you know. He says, call me the spokesperson between Earth and Telos. So,
and where is Telos?
The reason I say that is because you're trying to, I feel like you're wanting me to describe some sort of hierarchy in spirit, and I don't know that that's all that necessary.
Oh, well, yeah, I'd rather it didn't exist anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess what I wanted to understand is the E.T., the legends of E.T.s are so full of, I guess we'll call it hierarchical thinking, you know. And I like to think it'll be just wonderful to know them and to see them as a different level of our soul journey, but I don't even know if that's naive. It doesn't matter, probably. Like, have we been ETs? I think so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We've had thousands of lifetimes, and they're not all on this planet.
I like that idea. I like that idea.
Yeah, not all on this planet. They're not all as human beings.
Yeah. So when I think of ETs, that I was saying this to somebody yesterday, well, that could be me of a future or past life. I don't know quite what an ET is anymore. So then I think some are probably awful and some are probably great and some are probably in the middle.
Well, same with us humans.
Exactly.
Would you invite every human you know to your birthday party? No.
No. But, I mean, that's really interesting. That is sort of expands my mind. People say, oh, there's going to be great disclosure. And I go, I think disclosure has been living with us all the way along.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, do you ever watch Ancient Aliens? I love that.
I haven't, but I should do that. Yeah.
Oh, you should do that. You'll love it. My only complaint with that show is they don't like to use the word spirit or angel or gods. They always call them aliens, you know.
But we understand politically why. We understand marketing why.
Yeah. But I love that show. And they talk about some of the ancient sites, how they could not have been built by anyone but aliens, or with alien technology, or technology that's far more advanced than what we even have now.
Mm.
So,
somebody told me yesterday or the day before that in Tibet there is a secret cave which some people are discovering more and more. A lot of secrecy is coming to light these days anyway.
Absolutely.
And it's absolutely full of alien or ET technology pieces.
I believe it.
Yeah, and apparently if you're a good girl in Tibet or, you know, whatever the in-group is, you get to know where it is and you get to explore it. But they really are careful with it.
Mm.
So, but it's leaked out, so you know what will happen now. But, you know, there's a lot more reverence than there used to be. It's a very interesting subject, and I will catch up with ancient aliens. This thing about, there's a chapter here on time and non-time, and you also have a chapter on death. I mean, we could talk about anything without even just talking about this book, and it would be somewhere in the book anyway, wouldn't it? Well, anyway,
probably.
Because the whole issue of time is fascinating to me. They say so much of life is an illusion and time is an illusion. It's a man-made invention and all that. And I understand that, but sometimes I go, what exactly does that mean? And going back to, so talk about time a little bit, because we are really quite immortal ourselves in a certain way, aren't we?
Absolutely. Yeah, how do I define this?
You don't have to define it.
Supposedly on one level, everything is happening at the same time. There is no past or present or future. It's just all happening now. And I don't know if you listen to the channel Bashar.
Yes, I have interviewed him a few times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's always talking about parallel parallel universes. Yeah, parallel.
Yeah.
That you're switching from universe to universe to universe to parallel universe every second of your day. Now, I don't quite understand how that works, but I believe that it's true. So, and it all has to do with the way that you choose to look at things. So you are seeing the world as you have chosen to see it. But, you know, that also includes the concept of we are all one. You know, once upon a time, we were all living in this big, huge cloud we call all that is, or God the Creator. And we were just having a wonderful time up there, being at peace and love and joy. And then all that is said, I think I want to create a world, an earth. I have a new project. And in order for him to inhabit that new project, he had to create individual beings out of this oneness. So he separated people into male and female, and that's what the twin flame definition goes all the way back to, that when you were one entity before you were separated into male and female. Anyway, and so these males and females came down onto the planet, and they put themselves in human form, and a lot of that just happened, in my opinion, so that we could learn more about ourselves, so that God, Goddess, all that is, could learn more about itself and create more beautiful, fun-loving, joyful experiences. And we humans erroneously felt like we were separated from God at that time, when in actuality, we never have been separated from God. That's one of the hugest illusions that we're all learning to understand better at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So there's oneness, twin flames, and it's all happening at the same time. These are concepts that are hard for the human mind to understand. But when you go deep into meditation, often you get into this place where you become one with the void, that huge, expansive, dark space, often called the void. And you begin to feel like the energy of all that is.
I love that. Tell me, what do you think about, like we're talking about twin flames very briefly, what do you think about soulmates? What does that mean?
Well, those are just like buddies you've had in the past, really
right.
Good friends you had a good time with. Your twin flame is that original part, essence of you that was split into male and female in order to come into human form.
But many times, and I was talking about time, many times twin flames, or those who claim that they are twin flames, have one heck of a time getting along, and so do soulmates. And I often think it's because they're perhaps out of sync or out of time. There's a dissonance because of somebody got this far and somebody got this far and they aren't in sync.
Well, what I've heard about twin flames is that they have had totally opposite experiences in all their, especially in this present lifetime. Like my twin flame would have devoted his life to doing something that I totally have no interest in and don't understand at all. But when the two of us come together, you know, we bring all that opposite knowledge together and can move forward with greater wisdom and knowledge. There's that. And then also, I like to think that when people, twin flames, can't get along, a lot of times that is because one of them has done their spiritual work and the other one hasn't. Or maybe neither one of them have. So they are into bickering.
But I think
you know how that goes. Rather than communication and talking through the issues and not getting so violently upset when something is different, that a twin flame relationship can be as awful as it is wonderful. And it's up to the people that are in it to choose which path they want to walk down.
And that moves us back through all these different, like unconditional love and trust and resonance and all of that, that a person has to move into that to be able to resonate together, right?
You know, that brings to mind something that my clients say to me a lot, is that, especially the ones that are just now awakening to spirituality, they go, oh, you know what, now that I'm learning all this spiritual stuff, I feel like I need to quit my corporate job and do something more spiritual. And I say, stop, right there. Your corporate job is not any different than your spiritual job. Everything that you do is your spiritual job. By that, I mean you take those beautiful spiritual concepts that you were just mentioning, love, compassion, respect, trust, blah, 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 and you work with those in your corporate life. Perhaps your life purpose is to awaken those still sleeping beings who you're going to work with every day by going to that corporate place of meeting and dropping little seed thoughts in their head and helping them to remember who they truly are in whatever way that they can resonate well with. Did I make myself clear?
Oh, yes.
on that spiritual corporate thing?
Well, it's back to the Bhagavad Gita. It says your consciousness, it's really important for you to develop the ability to love and respect and all these this wonderful list.
That is your spiritual work.
And no matter what your circumstances, and that's the part that keeps reminding me, it's not about whether you've achieved this or that, it's about what you can emanate, and that's what this is talking about in this book as well.
And Buddhists have a phrase that they go, after enlightenment, then what?
Chop wood, carry water. Well, we're almost done here, but you are a delight.
Oh, darn.
Well,
this is fun.
We'll do it again. I told you it's fun because we're both doing what we love, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this, I will send you this link, but this has been Ashlyn of Shasta Vortex Adventures. And we've been adventuring inside and out. And her book is Emerald Tablets for 2012 and beyond. And she has other books in the hopper. So check her out. And this is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you, Ashlyn, for joining us on Paradigm Shifters.
My pleasure. Totally.
And thank you for being one.
Yes.
Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you again
soon. Good night.
Thank you.